When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. On today's episode, we'll be discussing Muse, that band from the mid-2000s that were cool until they forgot they had a guitarist. I'm just kidding. Muse still rules. Today we discuss Muse, the collaborative storytelling game. Now normally, this is where I'd say that this is a really weird one, but friends, I just read Aria. Nothing will ever be strange again. I've crossed that Rubicon. I've pierced the veil and seen what no man ought. This game uses a deck of cards and was published in 2017. It's System Mastery. Hello and welcome back to System Mastery. It's the podcast that we make. That's me, Jeff, and my friend over here, John.
Ooh, hello.
He's my partner.
Oh.
Yeah. We're partners in business.
We're best of friends and partners in business and crime.
And crime. We also
don't tell the cops.
Yeah, you're
you fucking snitch.
You're cool, right? You have to tell us that you're cool if you're cool.
Legally, you have to tell me if you're cool.
Yeah, that is true. You do have to. If you're cool, you do have to walk around the neighborhood and knock on all the doors.
Oh, hi, is your mom or dad home? I'm cool.
I got to let them know I'm cool. I just moved into the neighborhood and I'm cool. Yeah, that's right. And then you peel out
and
on
then you do a sweet wheelie.
Yeah. And you're the middle car in the convoy. Which is, you know, the middle car always has to be the one peeling out on a sweet wheelie somehow. Like it just went over a jump.
Ugh.
Or you could do another cool thing too, like a super sweet yo-yo trick.
Yeah, you show up, you're like, hey, I need to let you know that I'm cool. Anyway, here's close-up magic.
Yeah, hi, folks. I just need to tell everybody in the neighborhood that I'm cool. Here's my playlist so you know I'm cool. That's right. You haven't heard of any of these bands. That means I'm super cool.
All right. I'll see you around.
I'll leave you to it. Stay away from my house. I don't want you bringing down the cool values.
Oh, my cool values.
So, how are you?
I'm fine.
All right.
We got back from C2E2. And I'm okay now.
It was a fairly good trip. We had a good time doing a couple of shows.
Yeah, a couple of shows doing new stuff this year. Always fun.
Yeah, we're showing off the new products that we're demoing as we go out to these various events for us. Not speaking for James, who has his own list of wonderful healthy products that you can purchase.
So many healthy products for a healthy you.
They're health products.
These supplements.
Yeah. He mostly sells big bags of spirulina.
Yeah.
Yeah, just loose spirulina that he harvests from the algae pits of his yard.
Mm.
But we are demoing a new monster manual sort of thing.
Yeah.
With the gimmick being that it's got three pages sort of per page, like one of those kids build your own animals books.
Yeah, you get the head, body, and legs that you can flip and mix and match between various monsters, and they all come out to be an actual usable monster.
Yep, in D&D 5th edition, they are all a CR 3-4 monster, randomly assembled. You have 125,000 possible combos in there.
Yep.
So go ahead and build yourself a fun monster as soon as that comes out in, like, July.
Yep.
And then we also have our deck of mini drinks, which comes out, I think, in a day or two?
It's
very soon. Which is the cocktail guide, but now all the cocktails in it have potion effects built into them.
And there are 10 new cocktails.
There are 10 new ones, and we removed a few of the old ones that weren't testing as well. And now we have, and now they all have potion effects, so you can use it like a deck of many things, but for drinks.
Indeed.
In the middle of your own game, and your party can get drunk and get magical effects on the side.
Hooray!
Yeah. So we've been out demoing those, and asking people what monster they'd like to have sex with, or date. I think it's just date.
Yeah. I mean, it's heavily quotes date.
I mean, the show's called Netflix and Kill. I think people know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's no, we're not hiding anything.
Like, everyone who shows up to that one knows what the deal is.
They know. The real ones know. Yeah.
Shout out to the real ones.
Uh-huh. What's up, real ones? Hey, just so you guys know, I'm cool.
Hey, just so you know, I am a real one. I have to tell you that legally.
I have to tell you legally that I'm a real one and I am medically cool. Here's my card.
I am medically cool. I am taking pills for it.
It's okay. I am not contagious. You will not get cool from hanging around with me.
Yeah.
You will still want to.
Oh, yeah.
That part's contagious.
That part is very contagious.
Yeah. So anyway, just tell your parents that there's a medically cool person in the neighborhood. And, you know, when you do it, give them the double thumbs up.
Give them a little A for me.
Sorry. I that's a condition of my coolness.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. I need my shot.
Sometimes I get a flare-up of being real cool.
I've got an inhaler for that. It inherently makes me look less cool. There's not even anything in it.
No. I just have to suck on an inhaler and people go, oh, they're less cool.
That guy's a dork.
Huh. Well, only cool people breathe normal.
Uh-huh. I bet he has to put one of those stickers on his nose before he goes to bed. And yeah. Tell your parents it's true, I do. I put a little banana sticker on
there. I put a little sticker on there. It's got a thumbs up and says, good job.
Rainbow Dash giving me a thumbs up, which is weird because they drew a realistic human thumb on her.
It's just a star that says, you tried.
So, but I have to fly it upside down legally because I did not try.
Legally.
I'm not legally cool.
Thank you for joining our legal podcast.
Uh-huh. Legally cool.
Legally, it's a podcast.
We're going to be discussing Muse.
That's right.
A storytelling game by Jonathan Benn. And this is a relatively recent game, although it doesn't, until you're actually opening it up and reading through it, it doesn't have that vibe. This looks like a book that was made in like 1991 and people just kind of forgot existed, like so many of the products we've reviewed over the years. But no, it's new. It's from like 2017.
Yeah. Well, the big thing that is going to be part of this book that won't really come across in podcast format is that they use a lot of public domain art.
They do. There's some purchased art in here too. But even then it seems like they bought it largely like remaindered. Like someone gave them a gift card to DeviantArt and they were like, all right, let's go pick and choose. Nothing in particular though.
Oh yeah. No, you've got like a Bosch painting is the front cover.
Yeah, a couple of them, I believe, because there's a different one inset into the word Muse.
Yeah, so you've got just a bunch of art things that they've thrown in there. And then, you know, like you said, the pieces in there that aren't like either classic woodcuts or like old art is just definitely someone's foot fetish picture from DeviantArt.
There's like two pictures in here that are definitely the author or the writer's barely described or disguised fetish. I mean, I don't think that that's actually the case. I don't think that the author of this book has a barely disguised foot fetish. That's not what I'm saying. But rather just that there are two pieces that are just like fetish art that just sort of was like, oh, it's innocuous enough. We can put it in here.
Get this on the cheap.
One of them is fairly foot forward. It's just some lady gnawing on tiny golden men and also sticking her big old bare feet right at you.
Yep.
And then there's also one that's like a little animal, but you can tell the artist normally doesn't draw like non-anthropomorphic animals. And this is a rare event for them. That they are like, okay, you want me to draw a little animal? Okay, no problem. So like six-pack abs, big old happy trail leading down to all the various dicks, all that stuff. You want all that, right? And they're like, no,
an actual little animal.
Like a little raccoon-y sort of thing. And they're like, I'm confused. What if it had a sexy human face?
What if it had an old human face?
So, but you know, the thing is, despite making these jokes, which is very fair, I know I shouldn't even say it's very fair. I'm not the arbiter of whether or not the things I'm saying are fair.
Oh, I am. I have to legally tell you that I am the arbiter of what is fair.
Is it fair to say that those were some gags?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I don't want to poo-poo the usage of public art in this way, because it feels a lot of the time that a lot of people who are writing role-playing games are staring down the impediment of the next step towards publishing is art, and it is crazy fucking expensive. And I get that, because artists deserve to live.
Yes. But when you're looking at, like, especially for something like a role-playing game where there has this expectation in RPG books where you're like, oh, I expect there to be a lot of art in this.
And very good art. It has to be super good or I'm going to go on the internet and make a big old stink about it.
Yeah. And there is a level of like fuck, I don't want to do this. And it's why, you know, I do not endorse, but I understand the people who are like, I want to use AI because I don't want to pay for that. And I'm like, I get it. That's I don't want to pay for anything.
Yeah, but that's just stealing art with an extra step.
Exactly.
Middle. That's like, hey, I'm going to steal this art, but I'm going to steal a lot of it and squish it all together.
Oh, yeah. No, it's basically like, I don't want to pay for this art, so I'm going to put it in without paying someone.
Yeah.
And
someone else will steal it.
Bad.
Some machine will steal it for me. That's why that's okay.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I get the whole, like, God, I need to put, like, a piece of art every however many pages. Oh, this sucks. And so doing shit that's like, oh, here's a bunch of, like, old Age of Piracy woodcuts. You're like, great. Love it.
Yeah. You got, like, the Lewis Carroll Alice in Wonderland pieces towards the back of this book.
Yep.
There's all kinds of fun stuff in here. It doesn't really matter. It's just kind of the most notable thing when you pick up the book and look at it. You're like, wait, is that the middle triptych of Midnight in the... Or the Garden of Earthly Delights. I know I said Midnight in the Garden of Earthly. That's like a movie or something. But just the Garden of Earthly Delights, the Bosch piece.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the actual game itself is very much collaborative storytelling. It's basically that sort of write down a sentence and pass the paper shared narrative storytelling thing with a bunch of rules put on top of that so that you can win.
Yeah. This is a game where someone was like, oh, I want to do a collaborative storytelling game. But I also want to be able to definitively say I won at telling a story.
Yes. and not just like I won in the cool way where I told a story and a bunch of people were entertained by my story and therefore
I don't want
I
it to just be like, oh, I won because my story was the best.
Yeah. Rather, when you say I want to win at storytelling, I would also like for upwards of three losers.
Yeah. I want to mechanically win.
Yes. By which I mean someone else needs to actually fail at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is very weird.
Yeah, like it's like me with sex. I can't have sex unless the person I'm
unless
having sex
three
with
other people lose.
Lose. They have to lose. They have to participate, but lose.
You're a loser.
I'm the best at sex.
Baby, want a bottle? A dirt bottle?
Why are you yelling at me?
You're a loser.
So, okay. Where was I? Yeah, it's collaborative storytelling, but shall we discuss the rules? It won't take very long. It's a slender volume, which we often will do when we're on travel time.
Yeah. It starts out being very, like, no rules, loosey-goosey, make a story. Because
yes.
It starts out with just like, hey, first thing you got to do is you're going to spend about, 30 minutes making a story sheet.
Uh-huh.
And the story sheet is just sort of the guideline for what type of story you are going to make. And the book is like, do whatever if you want to tell a story in an established setting. If you want to just be like, let's do some Star Wars, we can do some Star Wars.
Yeah, they definitely, the art just being public domain and then the whole thing where it's like, hey, you could just make a Doctor Who story or like a Sherlock Holmes story, a Star Wars story. It's got a lot of like, hey, just grab stuff from the public. We don't care.
Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah. Granted, I do think they care quite a bit. This feels like someone's labor of love project.
Oh, yeah. But for this, they're like, the actual story, like, seed from where it's coming from, they're like, it's fine. You don't have to be like, here's my beautifully, artisanally crafted world with its own bespoke magic system. Instead, it's like, I don't know, man, pick something that sounds interesting. And you can be bare bones to start with, because mostly, the one of the nice things about this is they're like, when you are making your story sheet, you should start with the worst, stupidest idea that you could possibly have for a setting and have everyone go, yes, that's great, and we love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, begin to throw out other ideas because they're like, you want to start from a place of even the worst idea should be told, yeah, that's fine, we will consider it,
mm-hmm.
so that everyone offering suggestions doesn't feel like, oh, no, that's not good enough. That shouldn't go on the list. Because when you look up at the list, you're like, oh, already on the list is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I can go ahead and throw out whatever.
Yeah, so you can always start your thing by just being like, what if there was a world where there were like dungeons you went into and they had dragons in them sometimes?
And they'd be like, ugh, that's stupid.
Stupid. Why would anyone want to
all
do
right,
that?
All right, but that goes on the board.
Okay. Well, I can't think of any other ideas, so I guess we're doing that one.
So I guess we'll be doing that for 40 years.
No breaks. Yeah, it does say at the beginning, it's like, here's the things you're going to need to create this story. This game plays fast. You'll be able to play it in about 4 hours start to finish, which is an older definition of fast, I think. I think we've moved on from that.
Yeah.
Modern technology has enabled us 300 megabytes.
It's very interesting when you look at it as fast from the point of view of someone who's like, I am used to playing long campaign RPG games and going, oh, 4 hours and you're completely done with a whole story and like that's it. Yeah, that's fairly fast for being able to be like, here's an entire RPG game. But other games exist that can let you tell a story fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole like, oh, this goes fast, it'll take 4 hours is like, well, eh.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that it feels very much like when you're reading your way through, you're like, okay, so it doesn't actually have a set story it's trying to sell you. It's instead telling you a quick narrative based around one central question. So you'll always be like things like, will Joe survive the zombie apocalypse and make it to the helipad on time to escape to the safe island?
Yeah.
And then everything's building around that seed.
Yeah, because you start out and you're like, all right, let's build the world generally. So you might be like, we're doing a zombie apocalypse. And then from there, you have people will establish, like, what are the characters? Who are, like, our main people? What are some of the main scenes is one of the things where you're like, okay, instead of just going, this takes place in the U.S. or even, like, this takes place in Los Angeles, you'd have to go, no, this needs to be, like, a scene you would have in a play. So, like, the inside of Joe's apartment or, like, a local Walmart or whatever it is, it needs to be a very specific place that a scene can happen.
Yeah, it has to happen entirely contained within the film Joe's apartment.
Yeah, it has to.
Yeah. Or at the very worst, Joe near a volcano. Maybe he's fighting it, maybe he's not. I'm not in charge of that.
He's competing with a volcano.
It could be, yeah, or in a legal dispute with it or something. We're not really, I haven't seen that movie. I don't know.
I have.
I have too. I'm kidding. The point I was trying to make, though, originally was reading through it. And again, this is a 2017 book, and it's like you'll be able to play the super fast game in like 4 hours. And here's the only things you're going to need are 2 to 6 people, one regulation deck of playing cards with the Joker removed, 30 plus glass beads or other some kind of token, pens, paper. You can use blank paper, but also here's a bunch of story sheets you're going to need to do. And all I spent the whole time being like, okay, so it's a quick build your own narrative and then resolve one question about it storyline game. Which needs all these things.
Well, I mean, it's resolved multiple questions.
Sure. Has this author heard of Fiasco?
Yes.
That's where I was getting at. It was like, oh, because this is already very similar in my mind to that.
I mean, I'll go ahead and say the big thing that made me think of Fiasco more than anything else is less the structure of that and more the idea of, like, you know, you've got this focus on the narrative rather than playing a specific character, which, you know, in Fiasco, you will be like, oh, I'm going to play whoever and, you know, jump in. But people can play whoever in your scene. But in this, the fact that nobody is any given character,
that
you're just like, oh, you just play a game. We've got a list of who the characters are. And anytime you're describing something, you could just describe whatever happening to whoever.
Yeah, by collaborative storytelling, we mean really very much a round robin version of collaborative storytelling. Insofar as no one's doing a voice for you during your narration, you're the only one really talking. Other people can react, and there are mechanics by which they can attempt to wrest narrative control from you. But otherwise, if you're like, hey, this is a fight scene between five people, you're playing all five people right now.
Yeah, you narrate what happens.
Yeah.
That is the whole thing you do. In addition to coming up with the scenes and the people that are in it, you also, of course, have to have some motivations for everyone of, like, what do they want to have happen?
Yeah, the basics for the characters is that each one of them gets a description, a goal, and a relationship.
And you will, once you've basically filled out the whole sheet, you will decide one character that is essentially the protagonist, because you will have a main question, which is sort of the main thrust of whatever the story you're telling is. So if it is like a zombie thing, it's can they escape on a helicopter from the zombies?
Yeah, that's called the crisis question.
That's going to be your main one. You have a bunch of side questions that can be answered and new ones show up. You'll generally have like one other at a time.
Yeah.
But those all can go to whoever, it doesn't matter, but the main question really has to revolve around whoever you decide the protagonist of the story is.
Yes. So when you're starting your game out, you start by throwing out a story seed, which we already mentioned. It's start with a dumb idea and build from there. You have things like, oh, in a world where teeth are money, will the richest man be a shark?
Yes.
Or something, you know, that's probably already got too much question in it. Rather, it should be in a world where teeth are money, sharks dominate the market. And also, I guess underwater zip lines have been invented and Taco Bell does not exist. And there's your basic story seed. Quite stupid. You should probably dispense with that one and come up with a good one.
Yeah.
Then you're going to develop some characters who exist in that world. Then you have your crisis question after you pick one of the people, which is going to be backed up by a threat, which is something like, well, what's stopping this person from just easily achieving their goal? What wants to stop them? What is your antagonist or your antagonistic force? A number of scenes, which are locations that can occur within that world or events that are occurring within that world.
Mm-hmm.
And then subplots, which are the secondary questions applying to the main character or to the side characters.
Yeah. Now, usually you'll just, in the same way that you have the whole, like, pitch meeting thing for, oh, here's all the different story seeds we could do, or here's all the characters we could do, all of them are, write a whole bunch down, whittle down to, like, the one you want, or the handful of characters, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with the questions. Like, you start out and you go, oh, what would be interesting things that might happen? Will this happen?
Yeah.
And eventually one of those will be decided on of like, oh, this is probably the big story one. But it does have the capability of, while you are playing, if it turns out that what you decided was the crisis question ends up, as you are telling the story, not being the thing that actually matters, you can just make a new one and the crisis question will turn into a regular side question and you'll get a whole new one.
Yeah, like if it turns out that that question is not going to lead to the climax of your story, then figure out the question that will and use that one instead.
Exactly.
So, how do you do this? Well, you're going to be dealing out a bunch of stuff to all of the players. And keep in mind that there is no narrator role in this game out that is permanent. Everything is temporally adjustable. So when it's your turn, you're the narrator. But when you resolve by either getting to mark a check on something or put a card on something or put a token somewhere, then you are passing the narrator role to the next person in line.
Yeah, everyone gets to do, like, I narrate, a thing happens,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes on to the next person. The way that the mechanics work are weird, but you start and you get a number of cards.
Three.
And you have a maximum number depending on how many people are playing.
Yeah, I lost that page and I couldn't find it again. I was having a hard time remembering what the maximum was because I thought it was just three because that's when you get dealt in the beginning of the game. But then in one of the examples, a guy bids six cards on something. And I'm like, how did you do that?
I can't remember the exact progression. I remember at four players, the max is eight.
Yeah.
And then it goes lower the more people you have.
Yes.
But the general idea is you'll randomly determine, however you want to do that, who's going to narrate first.
Uh-huh.
And as a narrator, you will tell a scene, and generally you want to pick something in there to essentially check off of a list.
Yes.
So you can either, like, talk about someone's relationship,
mm-hmm.
or like a scene, or establish something about someone.
Yeah, like if you don't want to, every turn does not need to be used to move the story forward. So for example, you can say things like, oh, one of the characters is the dashing archaeologist, and his name is the Rogan Josh. Boy, is he delicious. And Rogan Josh is this time just an archaeologist who's dashing. That's all we know. But there's a little box next to his name on the story sheet page for this character on the table. So if you want, you can spend your narration just describing all the details about Rogan Josh and how cool he is and why he's so dashing. And then you can mark that check and draw a card as a reward for doing so and pass narration.
Yeah, because you are going to probably spend the beginning of every round just doing that where everyone's like, I'm going to pick one of the things that doesn't have a check mark next to it yet and flesh it out because that's how I'm going to get cards in my hand.
Yes.
To start with, you know, since you've only got three, you don't have a ton of options. So you want extra cards because that is how you will do the mechanic for essentially winning, which in this game is being the one that gets to describe outcomes of things.
Yes. So when you play, when you are handed cards, when cards are dealt to you, you can look at them, but it's like blackjack rules. You keep them face down and you keep them secret from everybody else.
Yeah.
And until such time as you hit a showdown or the epilogue discussion, they will always be face down.
Yep.
You're not going to get to see them until such time as you need to resolve some stuff. Tokens, on the other hand, are open player information, but they're much harder to get and much more limited in scope and application.
Yeah. The tokens are only for the crisis question.
Yes.
The cards themselves, if you're not like describing a scene or enhancing a relationship or doing whatever, then if you want to specifically move the narrative towards a yes or no to one of these questions, because all of them are supposed to be structured as a, will this happen?
Yes.
So all the questions are like, will like these two characters kiss? Will this mm-hmm. person get to the airport on time? Whatever the hell you're doing. And you can, in your narrative, you can never answer the question as part of your narrative. You can't, you know, also like change, say, the crisis. So if the crisis is, you know, oh, will this person win the big tournament? And you're like, oh, in my narration, the tournament is canceled. Then as long as you don't step on the yes or no from that, you can at least describe how it might go one way or the other.
Yes.
So if you're like, oh, I don't want this character to get to the airport on time, I can describe how there is ridiculous traffic that they are stuck in.
Yeah.
And they're so angry about it that they throw a bottle of piss at someone.
Yes. And then they end up in the back of a truck dealing with John Candy, who's a professional polka player, and he's traveling.
And he has a bottle of piss.
He has a bottle of piss, and he just got it. And he's feeling real lucky about that, because he's like, you know what? It may be a bottle of useless piss, but up until that moment, I didn't have a piss to put in my pot. I had this pot with no piss to put in it, and now I have piss for my pot.
Yay! But if you describe it going one way or another, every question has a yes or no to mm-hmm. it. And if you want to describe it going yes or no for that question, you do a narration that would imply it would either be easier or harder or going towards one of those answers, and then put a card from your hand on that answer.
Yeah, yeah. Like, basically, the layout of this game is pretty difficult to describe because, effectively, you have, like, 10 sheets of paper out on the table in between all of you.
Yeah.
Because you have the crisis question and then two cards in front of the crisis question that are marked crisis yes and crisis no. Then you have two questions that are not, they're subplots, and they also both each have a card that is yes and no. And whenever you move towards one of those results, you put your card on that thing, and there is a maximum number of cards that can... Oh, and whenever you put a card on a thing, if you advance the plot forward and you put a card on it, you then take that card and put it into your play area.
Yeah. So if you play for no on something, you will put a card on the little, like, probably note card that says, like, you know, side question one and no.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, all right, I put a card on that, and then I will put that card and note card that says no in front of me, meaning that I currently control that narrative.
Yes.
If anyone else plays a card to the no, then they will then take it and be in charge of it.
Yeah, until such time as the maximum number of cards on that card have been played, at which point it's locked into the person it's sitting in front of. When cards are locked in like that, or when there are enough cards on both of them to activate a showdown, you can say, all right, it is time to resolve this question as your turn.
Yeah. You need to have at least two cards in both the yes and the no.
Yes. And when that happens, now, whoever nominates that showdown to begin has to have one of the two cards. And then them and the other person start revealing the cards and going through a complicated showdown mechanic, which I will explain. And when this happens, the other players, who are still watching at least, are now engaged as supporting players and can help back the play to either answer the question as yes or no, as they would choose to do so.
Yeah.
Whoever wins this showdown, which again, we'll go through the rules of in a second, gets to narrate the outcome and actually gets the yes or no answer. And then they also get some, or they get rewards. The person who wins a showdown and anyone who was a supporter of them get tokens, which can be used to play onto the crisis question card. And the people who lose get cards.
Yeah. All the cards that got played in the mechanics for determining it, you basically split that number of cards. So if, like, the opposing side played 11 cards and you were the only person who was on the other side, you would get 11 cards. You'd have to immediately discard down to whatever your max was, but you would be able to then, you know, pick the best from that.
Yes. So cards go right back out to people. They turn them back face down, but now they've become semi-open information. Like if someone got an ace or something, you know they have it until such time as it shows up out on the field again. Okay, so how does a showdown work? Well, you reveal the cards and discard all of them but the least valuable one from each of the two results.
Yeah.
Now, at the moment, whoever has the high card, and this game uses, I believe, the bridge structure of values for
yeah.
suits.
Backwards alphabetical.
Yeah, backwards alphabetical, or as I always remember it, black, red, red, black. Because it goes, I think it's spades, hearts, diamonds, clubs.
Clubs.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, backwards alphabetical. And then also numeric with ace high.
Yes.
So if you flip and discard the high value cards, leaving only one low value card, then and you have like a six and a five left, then the six is currently winning. Now, at this point, other players can contribute to this, and it goes round robin for contributions. And you can either raise the value so that high card wins, or move into pairs, three of a kind, and four of a kinds to win.
But you always have to beat the other thing.
Yes.
So if you are sitting there and you're like, oh, sweet, I've got like a high card past whatever's on there, but before you can play it, someone goes, oh, and I'll do a pair on this, and you don't have a pair, all of a sudden you're like, well, fuck me, I can't get in on this anymore.
At which point, if no one can beat the pair that's on the table, then that outcome wins.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's basically the same rules as a card game I used to play in high school called Pusoy Dos. It's because it's a trick-taking game, but the trick-taking is based around being able to form, like, ersatz poker hands, but not counting things like straights and so on.
Yeah.
Just pairs and trips. So all pairs beat all high, all three of a kind beat all pairs, all four of a kind beat all three of a kind. All ties are resolved via the, as we mentioned earlier, reverse alphabetical bridge suit format. So it's impossible to actually have a tie.
Yes.
When that is resolved, as we mentioned, the winners get tokens, the losers divvy up all the cards that were involved in this.
Well, you just get a number of new cards equal to however many were played.
Oh, that's right. They all go into discard. The divvying up is for a different mechanic. I think that's for jump-ins.
Yeah, because there is the bidding system to go in, but we'll get into that.
We're not there yet. Crisis questions, which you instead take over by playing tokens onto the crisis question, are resolved in the exact same fashion, but there are a couple of caveats. First of all, there are no cards on them, so when the round begins, the people who are controlling the crisis questions have to place cards out to start the mechanic. And also, you can't activate a crisis question to answer it until after you have taken an official game timeout. Because
yes.
In this game, timeouts are mechanics that are used for things like, I have to go to the bathroom or whatever, but also for things like, oh, we're about to enter a new phase. Is everyone comfortable with that? Does everyone like the current outcome or potential outcomes? Do we need to change things?
Yeah. The timeout in this as a mechanic is essentially a, hey, do we check in of, do we want to change something?
Because
you can go, hey, do we want to change the crisis question? Do we want to add a new side question? You know, do we want to extend the like amount that we are playing so we have a new question that goes in? Do we want to just move to the point where we're like, yeah, we're close enough to the end of this, we should just move on to finally doing the last question?
Yeah, because the other things you can decide during a timeout are like, no more new questions. Like, this is,
yeah, you can say this has gone on long enough, we need to move towards the fucking end.
Yeah, because you can also always add new questions. But this is a great, or if you use a timeout to say, all right, we've been going on long enough, we're not going to keep going, you can do things like knock down the narrative aspect of adding new subplots.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a neat trick to it. Crisis question, when it gets resolved, does end the game. The person who wins gets to narrate the epilogue. There's no other rewards to be handed out on that one. You don't get any like secondary cookie prizes or whatever. You just kind of get to watch and see the cool ending.
Yeah, you just get to be the one who decides how things end. And it is... It's interesting to me that the playing a being the first person to play a card to a yes or no in this, it is almost always a thing where I look at it and I go, man, I should play a card, the lowest card I have in hand, and narrate the outcome I don't want to see happen, and put that in the other one, because it can't happen until there are two cards placed on there, so someone will have to take it away from me, so I can just sabotage immediately.
Yeah.
And then, on my next turn, try and get, like, the other one that I do want to have happen.
I think the thing that I found most interesting about all of this is that it really does assume that if you have four people doing this story together, that they will pretty neatly divide up into, like, two people who want this one outcome and two people who want this other outcome, enough that they're willing to fight over it.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I feel like if I was sitting around with four of my friends and we were trying to tell a narrative story, we'd all be like, that's fucking cool, that happens all the time, instead of like, no, that will not happen.
Oh, and that was one of the big things for me, is I kept looking at it like, you need to have two on yes and two on no, at least. And I just kept looking at it like, you're going to have some outcome where you've asked a question and everyone at the table is like, I definitely do or do not want to see that happen. And people will keep narrating until they've maxed out the one side. And then they kind of go, oh, fuck, I guess someone's got to do this. And you're just sort of forced into that.
Yeah.
And if you're the one who's like the loser who gets stuck holding the bag, you then have to like beg the other people, be like, hey, can you please play a bunch of cards so I can at least get cards from doing this?
Yeah.
Because if it's like, oh, everybody wants this to happen, and the person who like starts the showdown with you goes, oh, I put a three of a kind aces down, you go, I can't beat that, so I guess I'll draw three fucking cards. Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah. Oh, and if I'm already near my maximum, this is a fun rule in this game. There's no rules for going above your maximum hand size other than don't. So if you go above your maximum hand size and it's not your turn, you immediately discard back down to your maximum hand size.
Yeah.
You don't get to do that at the end of your turn. So it's not like you can stack cards until it's your turn and then have a commanding hand.
Yeah. The only, if you draw a card, like if a showdown happens on your turn and you happen to get a lot of cards, you don't discard them until the end of that turn.
Yeah.
But doing a showdown ends your turn. So it's just a weird thing that was like, the book had to specify that you would immediately discard down from max if it wasn't your turn, because I'm like,
well, there's no
even
way
if it is your turn, it wouldn't matter.
Well, yeah, because there's no way to gain cards during your turn until you're ending it, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, because you're always like, oh, I'll get a card for describing something and doing a check mark or whatever,
but that'll end my turn.
Or I get a card from showdown, but that's the end of the turn.
Yeah, so anything you do will end your turn. So yeah, you're right. It's interesting that it specifies non-turn player when realistically it could just be everybody, because the person who's narrating has no way to go over hand size.
Yeah, there's no way to get a card over hand size and then play it in the same turn.
Yes. The closest that comes to that is the mechanic of jumping in.
Yes.
Because again, like I was saying, the biggest kind of narrative, or not narrative, but mechanical thing I keep running into when I'm envisioning the playing of this game is the problem of everyone getting along. Like if everyone's like, yeah, that sounds great, then you're going to run into a problem where the game's mechanics are all based around trying to shut down other players from trying to move a narrative in a direction you do not want.
Mm-hmm.
Like instead, you can be like, well, we all agree on how this should go and we all like it, but I want to be the one to say it so I can be the one who wins.
Yeah.
But that, to me, that doesn't feel like a strong enough narrative, like mechanical factor to keep me invested. But there is a mechanic by which you can, in the middle of someone else's turn, go, nay, sir, I will wrest control of this game from you and describe what, or I can even eliminate the last two or three sentences you just said. Because normally there's a rule of don't just use your turn to completely negate all the story that's happened prior.
Yeah, if you're like, oh, I narrate how this guy gets a brand new job as an architect at a cool firm, and then you're like, cool, my turn. He immediately gets fired and goes and gets a different job.
Like, I think you can potentially do that. The one thing it wants you to not do is say, if your turn is like, my guy drives into a new city and he immediately sees a cool skyscraper and he's like, that's where I want to live. And then the next person just goes, no, he doesn't. He drives to a boring city and there are no skyscrapers.
Yeah, it's don't just immediately undo something someone said with your turn unless you do the jump in mechanic. And that is where the bidding system comes in.
Yes, because if you would like to really, really take control, you don't like the way the narrative is going, or you think you could do it better, then you can say, I'll jump in and bid a card. Now, you bid them face down. In this case, you're not counting the value or suit of the card. You are just counting the number of cards you are willing to throw away on stealing the turn.
Yes, and other people can jump in as well to try and, like, meet or, well, beat you unless they are the one who is currently narrating, and then they will have to meet.
Yes.
So if you're like, I will bid two cards to take control, the person who is currently narrator can be like, no, I'll give you two cards to fuck off.
Yes. And it goes back and forth. You can raise on that.
Yes. And it just keeps going until everyone has decided, I'm not going to throw in anymore.
Yeah. And at that point, if your turn gets skipped, because the game plays, I think it's clockwise, if your turn gets skipped by the fact that it jumps from like a person, you know, like a like an Uno reverse card, it goes to a person whose turn it just was, which means you're waiting even longer for your turn now, you do get a card as a consolation prize.
Yeah.
If you are the narrator and you bid all of your cards and win, you may think, oh, now what am I going to do? It doesn't matter. I can't play a card onto a thing mark a check on it or move a thing into my side. I can narrate, but there's no effect. I'm effectively just, I don't know, dry humping the air here. But no, you draw a card.
Yeah, if you are ever at zero cards, you draw a card.
Yeah, I thought that was an amusing one because it actually had to have a question in the like Q&A section at the back, the FAQ, where it was like, hey, I just dumped all of my cards to retain control. Now what? And it's like, draw a card. But I can't draw cards. I'm in the middle of my turn. Pretend you started another turn.
Yeah, because technically, when you do the rest control thing, whoever wins, even if it is the narrator wins, it is, now it is my turn and I start doing a thing. And
yes,
no one can jump into a jumped in turn.
Yes.
So if I, you know, end up bidding three of my cards and getting narrative control and it jumps over to me, no one can then go, hey, cool, I'm glad you lost cards. Anyway, I bid.
Yeah, that has to be another rule that they had to make up and add to the game, because ultimately, if you don't do that, then it's 1v3 whenever it's your turn to narrate. So if you're like, so this guy's driving and he arrives in a new city, and the first person will be like, I'll bid one card to say no, he doesn't. And they have to go, ugh, here's one of my cards. And the next person can just go, I bid one card to say no, he doesn't, until you bleed the narrator dry and they don't get to do anything at all.
Yeah.
So in order to stop that mechanically from happening, they have to come up with a, you're only allowed to interrupt the narrator once. One jump in is for everybody, and then after that, you're done with jump ins until the end of this narration.
Yeah. So the other thing is, it very much is like, oh, you should use this strategically, not just, oh, you were narrating a thing and I didn't like it, or I had a really cool idea for a thing I wanted to have happen based on someone else's narration and I want to jump in just because I'm really excited to have that happen. Instead, it was like, if someone's about to call a showdown on a thing and you don't currently control the question, you should jump in so that you can then get the narrator thing and go, great, now I'll narrate this thing, put a card onto it, no one can jump in while I'm doing it, then I will gain control of it and it goes to max cards and no one can take it.
Yeah, this stuff was driving me nuts. Like, I don't think it's bad. I think it's a neat concept, but even within the book, they kind of realize that this is quickly going to get gamed out and you're just going to be like, all right, can I put a card to take control of a card I already have control of? Sure, you can. You probably shouldn't, because it won't help, unless it's the last card that can be played on that, and it will lock it down for you.
Yeah, if it's like, oh, you can only put four cards on any given thing, so if it's already got three and you're the narrator, then fucking, and you want it, lock it down.
Lock it down. That's your turn this round. You describe how that event will get a no answer, just so you can lock that shit down. Which is wild to me, because you're at the point where, like, I can't really think of a fourth no thing to say about why this guy won't be able to make it to the helipad in time, but I have to lock this down.
Yeah, there's a lot of using that jump in mechanic feels bad, honestly, because it's like the higher your player count is, the more annoying it is if you're like, all right, you know, this person goes, then this person goes. And then the person, like, two ahead of them decides, oh, I want to jump in. All right, well, they both get a card, but now it's going to force them to do a jump in because they're like, all right, well, I've already listened to three people narrate, and now it's back to the first guy again. I'm going to need two more people till it comes back to me, assuming nobody jumps in from that.
Yeah, I mean, so worst case scenario is the person to your left jumps you, and then you're like, well, great, now I got to wait for the entire table to go again.
Yeah, it just ends up being this mechanic that normally is like, oh, this is so you can really try, if something's important to you narratively, you can really fight for that. But I'm like, no, what it ends up being is the second anyone engages with it, it is now a mandatory thing to make sure you're playing the game.
Yes.
Because otherwise you have that thing where you're like, there's been 10 turns and I have not said a goddamned word.
Mm-hmm.
This sucks. I have to jump in order to be able to play.
And what's weirder about this is that one of the core mechanics by which you achieve getting cards in this game, which you desperately need, one of them's getting skipped. One of them is just drawing back up to, I think you just draw one. It says, if you deserve it. And I was like, what do you mean if you deserve it?
Oh, well, that's if you describe something after everything has been checked off.
Yes.
If you describe a thing and it's cool, someone can reward you a card, but it has to be someone else gives it to you.
Yes, which means that if you're working with someone on a yes result, it's not because they think what you were saying is cool. It's because they know you need ammo in order to lock down that yes and make your version of the win happen, which is wild to me because I know they tried to work that in so you could hand out brownie points to the other players, but at the same time, they've made this whole cutthroat competitive poker system where, like, you're thinking about what value of card you're putting face down out onto a yes or no answer, because you know if you play too high of a value, it's just going to get discarded. So your best cards to play are the lowest cards you have that are not parts of pairs or triples that are already in your hand.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, so I'm constantly thinking about the mechanics of the cards, but at the same time, I'm trying to freeform collaboratively tell a story where the result is just to tell the coolest possible story among a group. And at the same time, you're like, well, that guy who desperately is playing a card that I don't want him to because I want the answer to this question to be yes, just told the coolest story. Should I give him a card to indicate that I think he told the coolest story? No, fuck him. He's against me.
Yeah, he's not on my team.
Meanwhile, there's someone who is on my team, and when I could just say things like, I know he fell down and pooped, and they could be like, bravo, get a card, you're going to need it.
Shakespeare reborn.
Are you Philip Marlowe? Take a card, you beautiful, brilliant, egotistical bastard.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing to have a game that is so fully only about storytelling. You don't play a character yourself. You don't have any sort of like dice rolling or anything else. It is pure narrative control. Your prize for winning is narrative control. This whole game is about telling a story. And then they're like, anyway, we added mechanics so that you would be as cutthroat as possible. And I'm like, that's a fucking wild choice.
Yeah. Now, do I think it's a bad choice? I'm not sure.
The thing to me is,
at Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It hovers in the maybe not the best choice territory, and I'm going to say it's because this is so generically open that if you were like, this is specifically about telling stories that are themselves cutthroat. If this was Fiasco and you're like, yeah, everyone in this story is absolutely out to try and get the thing they want and fuck you, then you're like, oh, mechanically, everyone at the table is doing the things that the characters are doing. Oh, this is great. This makes perfect sense. This is going to get me into that headspace. But when you sit down and you're like, let's tell a story about fluffy bunnies having a good time. Is Mrs. Peekleweary going to have a great tea party? No, fuck you. No, she isn't. And you're like, what? What the fuck is this? How did it turn so cutthroat?
I mean, if it gets that violent in media, if you're like, well, okay, what's the narrative arc? Does Mrs. Peekleberry have a nice tea party? Then maybe that's not a worthwhile question for being either the climactic result or even something you should play. Like, notably, the book's got kind of a chummy, jokety tone to it, which I don't mind based on when it came out and what's going on with it. But it keeps saying like, hey, if none of you can agree on a story or if none of you can think of anything cool enough to be the climax of a story, maybe go outside and chase some squirrels, huh? That's always an option there,
what
slugger.
What a fun game. And I'm like, ugh, God damn it. Don't be chummy with me. You are writing a generic, like, storytelling game with a weird trick-taking mechanic. If this was specifically about telling a comedy thing, again, trying to lean into that Fiasco aspect, I would feel better about it being like, hey, I'm going to try and make some jokes at you. But instead, it's like, here is how you can tell a sweeping story about an epic fantasy. Anyway there, slugger, you're going to want to go outside and touch grass if you can't think of a cool fucking question, you piece of shit. And I'm like, wait, what? how the fuck hard turn did we get here?
Yeah. Like, a lot of the example stories in here are corporate espionage or cowboys fighting and so on, where you can usually think of what the end result is going to be. There are a few that are like, oh, there's a garbage strike happening in El Salvador, and let's watch these two guys try to resolve it amicably. And I think they actually do end up shooting at each other. But in the beginning, it's just a bunch of meetings where you're like, well, how do you make this into an I like the idea that if you can come up with any question at all, you could probably come up with a story that makes sense for it. But yeah, I'm still kind of on the fence as to whether or not marrying that to a system that is so full of various tactical ways to be underhanded or mean to the other players, and then also still having things like brownie point style kudos narrative rewards built into it.
Yeah.
It's such a weird blend.
It definitely feels like they were trying to solve for certain things. Mostly the, oh, well, how do we get cards back into players' hands? Because you start with only three. There's only so many boxes you can check. And if you've got like six, seven players instead of four, those boxes are going to go way faster. And if someone jumps in and skips you and you don't manage to jump in and get it before all those boxes are checked, you're like, well, now I have to rely on something else. So they're like, all right, we'll just make it so that anyone can give you a card. And it'll probably be, it should be, yeah, literally anytime you narrate, you get a card. But instead they made it, no, we're going to force someone to give it to you.
Yeah, because there's so many like mechanical things you could, like you could use a jump in, not because you don't like where the story's going, or because you want to tell a story, or even because you want to win a card, but just because the person whose turn it is has gotten too many cards or something recently. They have too many tokens on the crisis question. You could just be like, I'm just trying to stop you from playing, because if you play, you might win, or you might move something away from where I want it.
It's a very weird system that ends up being so cutthroat for not no reason, but a bad thematic reason. Because I'm like, you don't have a set genre that you are in, and having it be that way is either going to go for or against whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like trying to play Starcrossed, except that one of the players is not allowed to want the characters to kiss at the end.
Ah.
Like, they have to do everything in their power to make it so that they don't kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole narrative kudos thing drives me insane, because like, it even has a little sidebar in there that's like, hey, you know, this is from 2017. We know that these things are hard for players, especially for narrators who are very busy doing other stuff, to remember. We've all played Exalted and had the storyteller forget that they're supposed to hand out stunt dice. We know we're part of this, which is why it's okay for the narrator at the conclusion of their arc to go, did I do a good enough job to get a card?
Does anybody think I should have a card?
Does anyone
like,
want to give me a card?
No. It should just be a, you finish narrating, you get a card, because otherwise it is just a mechanic to make someone feel bad.
Yes.
That's the only thing it exists to do.
Yes. And the fact that you can beg to feel bad is like, what
please
masochist
slap.
Wrote this shit?
Yeah, when you get up,
some person with a humiliation kink.
And you're like, all right, and then this happens, and then this, and then he's distracted. Did I do a good job? And everyone just goes, no. No, that was bad. We're not giving you a card.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like giving you a card. Do you feel like giving him a card?
And then it ends up being like, if you're the last person, you go, yeah, fine, sure, you can have one. Or you end up being the ass who's like, no, fuck you. You get nothing.
You get nothing. Zero. Zilch. At which point, you've just moved the game to no one will ever get one of those cards again.
Yeah, because as soon as you do one round where someone tells something and everyone goes, no, you know what, you don't, then now that person will literally never give anyone a card.
Yeah, they're done. They're out of that game.
And as soon as it gets to someone else and it goes around, now you've got one more person on the fuck you no cards team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just dominoes to this whole like, oh no, I don't want to do it.
I mean, I think at that point it moves. You have two people, assuming a four player game, the first two get shut out and get mad. And then the other two were like, okay, fuck them then. We're going to give each other cards the rest of the game.
Yeah. And then
the
other two were like, we'll give each other cards.
Yeah. And so that's what's probably. But imagine that scenario where anyone would ever give anyone a card for telling a good story, though. Would that actually happen? No. Unless it was one of the two people that have locked into alliances.
Yeah. It just ends up being a thing where it feels like mechanically the game wants you to get one card per narration, but decided to put it on the, we're going to have social things determine that. I'm like, no,
don't.
You want it mechanically to happen every turn. Don't make it a thing where it might not, because fuck you.
You already made this poker. Finish it. Add some blind mechanics.
I'm the big blind. You're the little blind.
Ooh, I like being the little blind. Don't give me a card.
You are the little blind. I am the daddy blind.
That's what they, yeah. Oh, man. We have the daddy blind and the daddy's little boy blind. Blind. Those are the two tokens we hand out.
Lol.
Good job, slugger. All right. That's definitely the part where the game starts to get weird, as you can tell, because we definitely got very opinionated all of a sudden.
Well, yeah. It's the only mechanic the game has is this poker resolution system, and as soon as it decided, oh, and also there are ways where you can skip turns or deny people resources, at that point you're like, oh, that ends up turning the game from being yay fun collaborative storytelling into this is a storytelling competitive game.
Yes, and it's so weird to think, especially because you can bid in to buy away from someone and strip the last couple things they said away from existence. So they can say things like, and then the guards finally manage to kick the door in and they come in, guns blazing. Our hero throws himself to behind his desk and hides, only popping his hand up to shoot. And someone else can go, no!
Actually, fuck you!
The door holds!
The cops fall down and poopy themselves, and our hero gets a medal.
Yeah, and it's like, that is so weird to have this whole thing where it's like, oh, that would do. I've acknowledged previously in the book that that would be bad. To go like, oh, well, I spent my whole narration describing how you discover a vast and advanced underwater civilization, and you're just starting to drive into it when I pass control to the next person. And they say things like, oops, it was an artificial reef, and the main character's a dumb idiot who thought he saw a city. Well, you're not supposed to do that. You don't do that. Don't just shut down the previous player unless you pay for it. And then you can be as mean as you fucking want.
And no one can stop you because you're not allowed to jump in after you've jumped in.
Oh, no, you
so
are.
As soon as you jump in and rest control, you're like, nope, now I'm good.
No, because you've started a new turn.
No, you can't jump in when someone jumps in.
No. Oh, okay. So maybe I'm wrong on this. And please tell me if I am, and I will believe you at that point. But if I'm the narrator and I say, this guy poops himself, and you go, no, he doesn't, and then you win, and now you have control, you started a new turn, so you draw a card because you just started a turn, and at that point you start narrating, and since it's a new turn, no one has jumped in this turn, which means they can jump you now.
No, I was pretty sure it works of you can't jump in at someone's jumped in narration because you've already paid to narrate.
I suppose that's potentially true. Like,
yeah,
it's
anytime someone pays. Like, once it is resolved and someone loses cards,
see, that
they get to narrate for sure.
Yeah, that wasn't my read on it. My read on it was that the pay mechanic was there for the protection of the narrator to stop everyone from stopping every one of their sentences just to bleed them of cards. Because otherwise, to me, that's what the point of the jump-in mechanic would have been. To be like, I'll jump in and bid one just to force you to play one, and then he's going to do it and he's going to do it because it's costing us one each. But it's costing you a net of three just to finish your fucking sentence.
Yeah, whereas it is also a thing of, if I bid five cards and I'm like, I really want to say something, and yeah, I bid that, you can't then go, oh, you're down to one, I bid two.
Yeah, I know. You're right. It sucks. I'm just not sure which way that goes.
It's my way.
Okay, it's your way? I'm gonna let you in on this one. I don't remember, but you can see where my point was coming from.
Yeah. No,
so,
it's...
Just so I don't have to feel stupid.
It's fine. You don't need to feel stupid. You are, but you don't need to feel that way.
Don't tell me how I'm feeling.
You don't get a card. No, it is the few little protections there for, like, oh, don't try and, like, you can't jump in after a jump in, and you can't undo what someone said after their narration, just sort of falls apart when you're like, yeah, I can't undo it, but I can make it not matter anymore. So if you're like, oh, this guy goes into a submarine and he finds a whole city underwater, and you're like, cool. And then he takes his submarine back up to the surface and goes to a different town and doesn't care about that anymore.
Forgets about it.
He goes, huh, I'll put that in my journal later.
And then he forgets because he has crippling ADHD. The end.
Yeah, it is the kind of thing where, because whoever is narrating has such full narration control, as soon as it turns into a competitive game and you start being an asshole to someone, man, it's gonna turn into full fucking Calvin Ball.
Yeah. I feel like I know I've been harping on this a lot recently because it's something that's been weighing heavily on my mind, but this is the rare example of a game where it's so weird and the mechanics are so at odds with each other that I do feel like for me to give a final judgment on how the gameplay of this game, I would actually want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, because, you know, I know what a fucking role-playing game is, and I've played a million of them, and I've reviewed even more. I kind of know what the play experience is going to be like. But with this one, I don't fucking know. Because we're kind of predicting that everyone's going to instantly turn into feral Lord of the Flies dicks
well, no.
and just tear each other apart, but I don't know.
That's the thing, is it has these mechanics in place that are, like, encouraging you to do that. You could sit down with a group of four people and have that other problem, like we said earlier, where it's
everyone agrees.
Oh, we all want this thing to happen because we think that would be a cool story. Well, too bad. Someone needs to be on fuck you side.
Yeah, or
and
else
you're like,
you
well,
can't
I guess I'll throw cards
down.
On that.
Yeah.
And it just ends up being whoever is on the side that is like, no, where everyone wants yes. And you're the person who's currently controlling it. You're like, yeah, I'm not going to throw cards into this. I don't give a shit. Because if you're just there to tell the story and don't care about the I want to win and tell the narration mechanic, then you don't even need the cards because it'll be like, oh, I put down a 5 and you've got a 6. Okay, well, I'm not going to play anything. You win.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I want that narration to happen. And I don't care if I'm the one who does it because we're collaboratively telling a story.
And we're friends, and I trust that you tell cool stories.
Yeah. So it ends up being either you do not engage with the mechanics and tell a fun story together, or you do engage with the mechanics, and now you're all of a sudden being like, well, fuck you. Fuck you, buddy.
Is this just one of those machines where when you turn it on, all it does is reach out and turn itself back off?
Kind of. It's either, I mean, it's one of the two. It's either you engage with it or you don't.
Yeah.
And I feel like your play time, depending on your group, will be one or the other, where you're just fully either, we had four competitive people sitting around here. We all love to tell a story, but we all love to win more.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're going to veer hard into that bullshit territory. Or everyone's just like, hey, we're all improvers and we fucking love just telling stories. No one gives a shit about who wins. And you're like, great, then why are there mechanics here?
Yeah, I will say this. This is one thing I would know about this game. For a game that's about collaborative storytelling and freeform narration and everything, this might be the worst thing I've ever read that meets those criteria for the purposes of actual play.
Uh-huh.
Like if you're trying to make an AP show, this is steer clear. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I'm not even saying I wouldn't play it. I'm just saying that as an AP mechanic, this thing is wrong. It will mess you up because it's got so much hidden information and slow puzzling through bidding mechanics on resolutions and so on, and stuff on the table that you need to know where it is, like cards and dice or tokens and everything all over the place, that it just wouldn't work in a podcast format.
Yeah. I mean, if you were doing a stream of it, sure.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. But yeah. Okay. So let's get into our favorites and least favorites, because we've actually gone for a long time for a book this little.
Yep.
What's your favorite thing here?
My favorite thing, I think I'm going to narrow it down to specifically the when you start the story sheet, have someone say just the dumbest, worst idea they could possibly throw out there and have everyone at the table go, yes, that is a great idea and we support it. And then you write it down, because that just works real well to go, one, it gets the ball rolling so you don't have an empty, like, whiteboard of, hey, let's throw ideas out there. So you immediately don't have to worry about being like, oh, I don't want to be the first person to say something. So the first person to say something is specifically the one who wants to throw out the worst idea.
Yeah.
And then at that point, like, oh, we've already got something in there. I can throw stuff out. It doesn't matter. It is a very good get the ball rolling mechanic.
It's a good bit of like icebreaker style mechanics, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. So what is your favorite thing?
My favorite thing is the don't step on other people's collaborative storytelling instructions.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was well written, the whole part where it was like, look, this is at the end of the day, this is supposed to come up with something that you could potentially tell as a story to a group of people who did not know that you had a bunch of fighting about cards in the middle of it. So there shouldn't be parts where things just go backwards all of a sudden, or a whole swath of stuff that happened just didn't matter.
Yeah.
So don't do that. And I appreciate that, because that's the kind of stuff that is an easy trap to fall into if those rules aren't there to guide you.
Mm-hmm.
So no negating is a pretty strong rule that I appreciated.
Yeah.
So for me, that's my favorite thing. What's your least favorite thing?
I mean, of the mechanics, I think the one that I like the least is the jump in. It just ends up being, like I said before, a mechanic that the second anyone uses it, it ends up almost being required to continue to be used, even if you don't particularly want to, just so you can stay engaged.
Yes.
Because it is such an engagement killer to be like, there's five people. Three people told a thing, and then right when it was going to come to my turn, the guy to the left of me jumped in, and then it's going to go back around the table. And if I don't jump in, I will completely stop giving a fuck about this game.
Yeah, I feel like there was probably an easier way to solve that problem. You basically get moved to the bottom of the queue instead. That you can't jump in if you've already taken a turn during this cycle of players, and that if it happens to you, that just means you go last this cycle and not that you have to wait for the entire table to go around again. I don't know what the mechanic is to fix the jump in, but here's the thing. The jump in's going to be my least favorite thing, too.
I mean, the thing is, I understand doing that, and if you're like, I love the idea of the jump in mechanic and the fact that it will self-reinforce, means from a design perspective, it's great if you want to enforce that happening. And you're like, I want people to engage with this mechanic. If anyone does, you are enforcing it. But I don't like the way that it forces people to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, if I don't want to, though, I am forced into doing it. And there isn't anything narratively that helps by me doing that.
Yes. Yeah, sure, you get a card, but that's just an incentive for you to try and use that to jump in on someone else later.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So your least favorite thing is? Well,
I did already say it's part of the jump in, but it's a different part. So converse to my initial point that I really like the no negation mechanic, I don't like that you can negate for a dollar.
Yeah.
I think that's terrible. What a ridiculous message to give to people. Hey, bullying is bad and wrong. Don't be mean to other people. But if you give me a dollar... You can kick a fool. I don't care.
Oh, it's fully like, hey, be nice to other people or be mean to them, but give them a dollar afterwards and go, there you go.
Yeah.
It is very capitalism of it.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't like it just because the whole point of the no negation is that this is a collaborative storytelling. There's no such thing as bad ideas, blah, blah, blah. Except that, oh, there absolutely is. It just costs you to say so. If you want to tell someone else, no, that's dumb. It doesn't happen. You just have to spend some cards. And I'm like, I feel like if you're doing collaborative storytelling with a group, it should be very, very rare that you just go, no, that's stupid. It didn't happen. My turn.
Yeah. I'm just imagining playing any other storytelling game and being in the middle of describing something that I, as a player, think is a cool narrative decision and someone going, boo, that sucks and it doesn't happen, and then immediately wresting narrative control from me. That is such a, oh, well, fuck me then, I guess, moment. Yeah. That I'm
do I
like,
at least get a card for a cool story? No. Also, no to that. That's probably everyone else's second least favorite thing.
Like, it just ends up being a thing where I'm like, there are so many mechanics in this that are like, God, if you handle this poorly, it is just feels bad. Skipping people on the jump in, fully checked out. Trying to narrate something and someone goes, no, that sucks, and they wrest control from me. I'm fully checked out.
Yeah. A showdown starts and someone immediately has a three of a kind they've just been sitting on. So there's no counterplay at all anyway. I feel bad. There's so many different ways.
It's just a lot of stuff in this that I'm like, the baseline idea was fine, but then mechanically there are so many pitfalls where you could be like, and then I just play the game the way that it wants me to, and it immediately makes my friend unhappy with me.
Yeah. Would you play this?
I'd give it a shot. It's the kind of thing that is like, oh yeah, you know, you could sit down and play it fairly easily like a con game or whatever,
say,
because
it's
made to be a one shot.
Yes.
And you could do that. And with the right group of people where if I'm playing with like, oh, these are my friends and I know they aren't going to be assholes to me like that. Or if they are being an asshole to me, it will be in a way that is fun and playful.
Yeah, I'm used to my friends being assholes to me, so it's fine.
Exactly. Like, yeah. If I interrupt your narration, I go, boo, that sucks ass, and I'm laughing about it, and then I play two cards, we are still friends. But if I am at a convention...
No, we were never friends.
If I'm at a convention
this
and someone's like...
This is a business relationship.
Hey, I... And then Mrs. Fluffleberry decides to... And you're like, no, Mrs. Fluffleberry sucks ass. My turn.
Okay, so in my turn, Mrs. Fluffleberry immediately starts to suck an ass.
Yeah, it is the kind of thing where I'm like, if I'm playing with people that I know and trust, sure. But this is a game that could immediately turn into either me or someone else going, fuck this game and fuck you.
Yeah.
So, Yes, on the caveat of only people that I know and trust.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you?
I'm keeping this one inside the circle. Sure, yeah, I'd play it, but also it's got to pretty much be my polycule, you know? Like, like I'm not, I don't trust anyone else to play this game with, because I'm going to get, I know me. This game would make me mean.
Yes. I am a nice person, uh-huh. but I am a competitive person.
Yeah, you are a very competitive game player.
So
there's a reason that you and I cannot play,
Flux.
Flux. We can't play Flux, the two of us.
Because we will just get into a full Phoenix Wright objection fight.
Largely because Flux cards are just poorly written enough that there's a lot of nebulous stuff you can pull out of them.
Well, if you read it in a certain way,
yes.
and you're like, that is clearly not the intent, but the letter of the law, and then we just sit there and argue, and everyone else around us goes, boo, stop.
You guys suck as much ass as Mrs. Fluffleberry.
How dare you?
No one sucks ass like her. A duel.
To the death. But yeah, it is definitely a game where I'm like, I don't want to play that with people I don't know, because I will probably accidentally fucking hurt someone's feelings just because I'm like, well, I'm trying to win.
Yeah.
Because there is a win mechanic and I am an asshole.
Yeah, and I'm the kind of asshole where if I notice I'm not winning already, I'll be like, fuck it, I'm just throwing grenades from this to this.
Oh, yeah.
I'll get a rest control for no reason.
I would like to rest control. And the exact thing that you said was happening happens.
Yeah.
But I say it
But
happens.
I say it. Up yours.
But it was me.
And obviously I did a better job, so I get a card. High five. Thank you.
Yeah, that is very much the, ooh, you got to have the right group for that one.
Yeah, I know I'm not. So I would try this, but only with people who can keep my big mean ass in check. All right, so there you go. That's Muse. Otherwise, we can't make characters for this.
I assume we'll make a story sheet.
We'll probably make a story sheet for this instead, which means that one of us gets to toss out the stupidest idea.
Hell yeah.
Don't worry, we both will.
Don't worry, they're all stupid ideas.
That's my secret, Cap. So if you want to hear that, then all you got to do is head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/thesystemmastery. Don't put a the in there. I don't know why I did that. patreon.com/systemmastery. If you support us at the $2 level, you'll get bonus content where we do something in the game we just reviewed, and also ad-free versions of all of our main feed shows, so System Mastery, Movie Mastery, and Expounded Universe.
Yep.
Along with, there are bonus options available to pick up bonus content from all those shows, ranging all the way from $2 a month to $10 a month to get absolutely everything, dating back for a decade. There's a shitload of stuff back there, so if you need things to listen to, we're your guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even just the base $2 level to get the ad-free version and all of the System Mastery bonus content is just like, great, you don't have to deal with annoying ads. And also, here's like weeks of audio for you.
Literal weeks of audio. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's something like three of them.
Yeah, it's
that was
wild.
Years ago. It's way over a month of just, you could just listen to us on loop for a month.
Yeah.
So by all means, we strongly encourage you to stop by the Patreon and check stuff out to get that ad-free feed, because we'd rather that the ad money comes right to us than makes its way through some insurance company or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And, you know, why not cut out the middleman and just give that money to us instead
exactly.
of giving your semi-attention and the skip button to a Sealy Posturepedic commercial. Otherwise, we do also ask you to support our fine book products. We're authors now.
That's right. We have books.
We've written so many. I think we're at 12.
I have fully stopped counting. Once we got past 5, there was a point where we had, like, 4 books in the pipeline at one time, and I'm like, I'm not counting anymore. I'm done.
Here's the thing. You remember laughing uproariously and delighting and, oh, frolicking through the fields at the thought of Stephen King forgetting that he wrote The Tommyknockers, a book that he wrote while high on coke, right?
Uh-huh.
And thinking, what a maroon. How do you forget a book that you have written? And he's written like 300 books. He's written a lot. And we have written very little. And if you tell me, hey, did you know that you wrote a collection of like system agnostic character sheets? I would be like, no, I didn't.
That's bullshit. Fuck you, Mrs. Fluffleberry sucks ass.
And I have never done any coke.
As much as your doctors probably thought you had.
Oh, yeah. My blood pressure's at the coke overdose level, but I've never actually enjoyed. I might as well enjoy some of it.
You might as well.
No, I wouldn't. I would explode.
I would
laterally
balloon.
Explore for the next 3 houses. So that's happened to us. I forget some of these books, but they're good books, Brent.
Yeah.
And all you have to do to find those is go to wherever books are sold. Simon & Schuster, Amazon's an easy one. And we have a bunch coming out, and we have a bunch that are already out. And if you do have our books, the big thing we're asking you to do is go leave us a review.
Yeah. Even if you didn't get it from Amazon, leaving an Amazon review is great, because then that just bumps up visibility.
Yeah, that's a big thing for us, because that helps us get more sales, and that helps us keep making books.
Yeah.
Which is what we want to do.
Love making books.
So thank you so much. We hope you'll go by and support us in that regard. Otherwise, hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you over the bonus content, and you have a good one. If you love Star Wars but kind of wish you didn't, then join us on the Expounded Universe podcast as we read through all the old Star Wars novels that took the galaxy far, far away that you know and love and turned it into a place where Han Solo can punch a giant otter and Luke Skywalker almost gets eaten by a giant gold-plated pillar of Dinty Moore beef stew. Did you like Princess Leia? Well, too bad! Now she's a space racist! Don't believe me? You'll just have to listen to find out on Expounded Universe.